space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its 5-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim. With me, of course, are Admiral Elliot.
Hi, Matt.
And Dr. Squee.
Gone.
And we've got a bit of a bumper episode today. This is our return. We've had a couple of weeks off because we did Fantasy Forest, we did Destination Trek.
We did our live show live again.
We did a live show at Destination Trek, so we're back. So thank you to everybody who's tuning in. On this week's episode, we've got a whole slew of Trek news that is coming from San Diego Comic-Con. We're also covering the next two episodes of Prodigy, The Fast and the Curious, and Is There in Beauty No Truth? So we've got a lot to talk about, but before we dig into that, we don't usually like to get too serious on the show, but for particularly anyone in the UK, you're aware that it's a bit of a tumultuous couple of weeks we've had, and particularly tonight, there's been threats of all sorts of violence, and we didn't want to sort of let it go completely unmentioned. And we just want to say that, you know, we do this for fun, but we do look up to the ideals that Star Trek presents, and that's the kind of world that we'd like to see more of instead of what we've got going on at the moment. And for anybody who's in or around any of that, we just want you all to make sure that you're safe and stay away from all of it.
Yeah, I mean, I was just saying before we went on, the protests at the moment have come to Southampton, coming to Southampton as we speak, probably tonight where I am. And usually protests in Southampton have historically always been very peaceful, but where they're shipping in people for these protests, shipping not meant as any smart ass kind of wordplay, but where they are bringing people from other towns, like, and we've seen what's happened to the rest of the country. I fully support any of my friends who are going off on anti-protest marches. But if you're going to be safe, to be honest with you, with the way it's going at the moment, I would say just stay home until they've got this under control. There'll be time for making our voices heard. But like Jim says, we're here because we believe in Star Trek and we believe what it represents.
We're calling them out on social media, letting them know they are what they say. And if you support it, you justify it, done with you.
Yeah, this is an inclusive, absolutely, safe space for all here at Retrek, and I believe in the world of Star Trek. So if you don't believe in those views, I don't know what the fuck.
My work is doing a nice thing. It's not a nice thing that you have to, but they've ordered personal safety alarms for anybody who wants one.
No, it's good. I mean, it's not something that should be necessary.
We do have work colleagues who live in some of the potential hotspot areas for problems. Yeah.
It's a frightening time, but as always, we look to a more optimistic future, and that's what Star Trek's all about. That's what we're all about. So thank you to anyone who's listening, who's joining us. Hopefully those listening on the podcast in the future, this will just be a weird footnote and it can all be forgotten. But
wouldn't it be wonderful if these were the bell rights that led to peace and prosperity?
Indeed, yeah. So let's crack on with...
The bell rights do take part in 2024.
They do, actually,
Jesus Christ, as much as we don't want this to be the price of peace, if only this was what led to it.
But, with that being said, obviously all our love goes to anyone who has been affected, might be affected. And if you're taking time out of your day with everything that's going on to watch us, we really appreciate it. And hopefully we can have a bit of fun still. So, first of all, San Diego Comic-Con. We were actually at Destination Trek,
and it dropped.
When all of it dropped, I think it was on the Saturday night.
It was a Saturday night, and we were at a paid party, and a lot of us went outside onto our mobile phones to watch what dropped at San Diego.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think this is official Trek's way of trolling this, you know, event, which is now not going on by them?
Well, like, I'm not being funny, but how easy would it have been for them to put it on the screen for us? Like,
that's a good idea.
Literally from the room we were in for the party, you could have gone next door to where the Science and Community stage was. So they could have set up one of the laptops that were there and just blasted all of them there.
They could have done, yeah. I'm sure
it was an opportunity missed.
I'm sure there's possibly legal issues.
Also, the poor bugger who sat there on a Wi-Fi connection trying to download everything to play on the screen.
Yeah. But either way, everybody got to see it in due course. Yeah. So, I mean, all sorts to dig into around that. The long gestating Section 31 finally got a trailer. I wasn't blown away by it myself. I just didn't like the tone of the trailer. The music seemed really...
The music seemed off, and the graphics, not the CGI, but the actual sort of like...
The font and the way it was... To me, it almost seemed like it was trying to go, look how hip and cool this is.
I was going to say, when I saw the trailer, I must admit, I was just like, oh, it's a teaser trailer. Probably like, yeah, like I kind of thought the same thing about the font. But the rest of it, I was like, you know what? These teaser trailers are usually just cut to kind of look cool. Really doesn't give you much. I wasn't too like one or the other. It was exciting to see. There was a guy in there who was in the Office and quite a few other shows. Really funny. So I'm looking forward to seeing him. But it was more then when the I saw a kind of comment by one of the showrunners on it who was saying it's like, oh, this is going to reinvent Trek. This is going to break the, like, stuff. Or you think, you know what, Trek is like, oh, no, look, we want Trek to be Trek still. So I hope this isn't the tone of the main piece, I must admit.
Yeah, there's a reason we like Star Trek, and we're not massively into Star Trek veering off from being Star Trek.
No, yeah. I'm all for experimenting a little bit within it, but I want it to feel familiar enough. And you know what? If this is totally a different tone and it's a one-off movie and everything and it's enjoyable in its own right, fine.
Fine.
But I'm less excited about it now than I was before I saw the trailer, I think, which is the opposite of what a trailer should do.
I think because it's had such a slow burn of series. Like, we did, back in 2019, we did a panel at Comic-Con, and we did Future Trek. And back then, there were already hints at the Section 31. So we're looking at, and it's going to be 2025, so we're looking at nearly 6 years.
This
thing has been coming, and it's gone from, it's going to be a whole new series.
Yeah.
To now it's just an hour and a half.
Michelle Yeoh's won Oscars.
You can't have Michelle Yeoh for TV series anymore.
But fair play to like
unless you've got Netflix money. And then after a season.
Like I've said, since she won the Oscar, though, it's like it is really cool that she obviously loves the show so much that she wants to return to do it in some
of the role, yeah.
And one thing I don't want, though, is like it's like with Picard season one, I felt they made the mistake of making the technology. It just didn't feel to me like Star Trek technology. Usually, no matter what time zone it is, there's something recognizable about it. Like, you know, Discovery, when it went into the future, it was new tech. But it was of a piece to what had gone before. I don't want this to not feel like Star Trek. You know, it's fine to do different tones, and you can do different flavors. Look what they did with Lower Decks, Prodigy. Like you've got so many different flavors of Star Trek, but they all feel like they're in that Star Trek world, and you've got to get that right.
And maybe they're saving him for later. But where's Shazad Latif? I feel so bad for that guy. Like, he had a leading role in Discovery, and I can only imagine that they said to him, we're developing this Section 31. Do you want to stay on as a regular in Discovery, or do you want to go over to that? And he's thought, I'll go over.
I get my own show. Like, I'm a season regular in Discovery, but...
Yeah, I get second billing after Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah. thinking, oh, I'll have a bit of that.
Yeah, so I do feel really bad for him if that's the case, but you never know. He might turn up. Justice for Ash. We'll start it. We'll start it now.
Hashtag justice for Ash.
Yeah, we'll start that now.
Today we start the Ash Wednesday campaign.
Hey, there we go. So yeah, that was section 31. What else did we get? Strange New Worlds. We got a clip.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest, it very much feels pissy Vulcan to me.
I've not watched it. I'll be totally honest. I'm not bothered. I know what it's about roughly. It's just that never appeals to me, where they release full scenes out of things. I'm like, no, I want to watch it in context in the episode. It's like, I never understood why they did that way. They sometimes do it with movies. Like, they go, watch the first 9 minutes of so-and-so. Like, no. I'll watch the first 9 minutes when I can watch the other 81 minutes.
And this clip is like, it's like a minute long. And it's basically the pre-credit, like, as far as I can work out. Maybe a slightly edited down pre-credit. But that's all. It isn't, if you're going to do it, it's the least odorous version of that. Because when I clicked on it, I was hoping it would be a little teaser, like, you know, either a short clip
I think that's the thing.
I like when they drop a teaser, it's a bit like, it's where you get a couple of seconds of this, a couple of seconds of that, a couple of seconds of that, and you don't know if they're joined together, if it's related or what. But the trailer for Strange New Worlds looked like there was actually showing you several minutes.
That is it. That's what it is. I think they've not filmed enough to edit together a sizzle reel. So they're just, this is what we've got. And so, yeah, I've not watched it. I'm making no judgments. I will wait and see.
I've watched it once. Because you haven't watched it, I won't make any spoilers, but it looks like it could be very interesting.
I'm trying not to say. All I'm going to say is it feels more like more pissy Vulcan, which isn't to my flavour. I like Vulcan to be logical, not pissy, and this seems to be the thing again.
Then something we can all agree on is Strange New Worlds dropped a trailer. And again, we went to, which we will talk about in a few minutes, we went to Destination Trek. Strange New Worlds is clearly so popular.
Yeah.
Like, go to any Trek convention, and if not the majority, then...
There's two things that you can see straight away at all Trek conventions now. Lower Decks and Strange New Worlds.
Yeah.
There's so many people dressed in both.
I completely agree. I mean, the only thing which I would perhaps say is, like, obviously a Star Trek convention, you're going to get people dressed as all Trek. And one can be more popular than others within the Star Trek world, but it's ones which can kind of reach out to some people who aren't Star Trek fans or traditionally, which tend to do a bit better. And animation, there's always that thing you've got to get people past, of like, it's animation, but it's really good. Like, trust me, it's like, it's a bit Rick and Morty-esque, but is not really a copy of that. It's got its own vibe to it. And you've got to get people there a little bit. That's the only reason why I wonder if maybe the viewing figures were a little softer than expected. I know some people who just will not watch a Star Trek because it's animated.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah. But like you say, a tremendously popular. And I love the fact that in this trailer as well, their source is a thing they put before the VHSs back in the day.
Yes.
Like 30 years ago. And that's what they use. That's the fan service. That's the love that they're giving this. Thank you.
I remember that trailer. I mean, it started off as a trailer for
projectors and friends.
And your friends. They are part of the dream that is Star Trek. Yeah, it was the one where they edited together all the clips on
it. And spread throughout the stars.
Yeah. That was a brilliant trailer, though, where it was like, and then further into the future with the next generation. And you had Kirk going, I guess we weren't sufficiently entertaining.
That was
a great show. It was on all the VHS. I think that was when DS9 was launching, because it mentioned TNG, and then it was like, and now...
My limited edition VHS of The Emissary, the Emissary, the first one, has that trailer on it.
Yeah, and it was actually before that, it was... the very opening to it was the Star Trek VI trailer.
Yeah, that
they then expanded it for the overall franchise trailer. But yeah, just brilliant fan service, very typical of Lower Decks.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen it, it just looks like a kind of like, oh, it's a weird trailer. I feel like it's the sort of thing that if you don't know the reference, you'll know they're referencing something. Like, yeah. I know there's some sort of reference here, I just don't know it, you know.
Well, it's fine to watch on its own. It is very much VHS promo, isn't it? And on their final vault, on their final mission, what are you talking? And then you get them, what are you all about?
Yeah. And that almost gives you a bit of hope that maybe it won't be the final mission if they're acknowledging it. But
the showrunners have been teasing it, saying, if you watch it, that's how we get people.
Yeah, Mike McMahon has been saying, watch it. All you have to do is watch it. Be subscribed to Paramount Plus and watch it there. Don't watch it on the Snide. You need to watch it on Paramount Plus.
Yeah,
and watch it on Paramount Plus, so then Netflix can poach you off them and have more Star Trek series than bloody Paramount Plus.
Well, I mean, the good thing about the idea that they're doing these Section 31 TV movies, and when you look at something like South Park, for example, on Paramount Plus, they do keep dropping these movies that are basically extended episodes, but that might be how Lower Decks lives on, even if it doesn't get another season. It might just keep getting movies. A couple of movies every couple of years
I'd
or whatever.
I'd be really happy with that. If it has to be dropped as a series, I would be so happy if we still got future Lower Decks in the way of extended episodes. So
yeah, absolutely.
And also the I'd say probably the threshold for Paramount Plus to get it over the line. The reason possibly why Netflix brought out Prodigy was the viewing figures were probably like on the bubble, but I feel like Netflix has got more money to be able to spend, whereas Paramount theirs really hitting hard for them.
I think you'll probably also find that Netflix has a much higher viewing figures than Paramount is reaching.
So we are really like, that's the one for me. I want Lower Decks to continue, but I feel like they could bring that in for a landing. It had like a decent number of series, whereas Prodigy, I really wanted to get a crack of the whip. I feel like it's ending its voyage earlier than it should do.
Yes.
By a long stretch.
Definitely.
So that one is the one I'm really hoping to continued if I had to pick between two. But obviously I want them both to keep going. But
now I do have to administer a slap on the wrists to San Diego Comic-Con, because they did something very naughty, which was where they were teasing a Doctor Who Strange New Worlds crossover. And the Doctor Who account tweeted out the silhouettes of Mariner and Boimler. And there was a brief bit of excitement where it was like, ooh, are we actually going to get a crossover? And then the next day they announced, this is the crossover, and it's a crossover between two of the crappy mobile phone games.
Yeah.
Where them ones where you don't do anything, where you automate a different thing and it generates cash, and then you collect the cash, and then you automate a different thing. And then, so Doctor Who's got one of them games, Strange New Worlds has got one of them, not Strange New Worlds, Lower Decks has got one of them games, and they're both crap. And they're doing a crossover between the two of them. And fair enough, but don't tease it as if we're actually going to get a proper crossover.
Although
very
RTD is now pushing for, like, please write in, please do, because he wants that to happen. Like, and I must admit, I was kind of dubious of this, because I feel like they do exist in different, very different worlds. However, with the multiverse, you could have, like, if it's a multiverse, I'm in. But I feel like there's such different visions of the future. I just don't want them to say they're in the same world. That just doesn't work, really.
No,
it's also how's it going to work with Paramount Plus and Disney getting together, because it is two very different studios that have to do a deal.
Yeah, the logistics
of the deal is going to be absolutely mental to pull it off.
I feel like the way you do it is like you have one episode in Doctor Who and one episode in Star Trek.
Yeah,
if it was still the BBC, just the BBC, and it didn't now have Disney behind it, I could see it happening.
Possibly easier, yeah.
Mind you, in fairness, the devil might be in the detail of what the agreement is, because BBC still owns, like, it's up to them to make it how they wish. Like, Disney has some say with the money. Let's not pretend they don't. But I don't know, they could veto it. Like, and I don't know if
primarily
stop it. It would be what, like, I mean, obviously Disney knows that they would then be shown on Paramount Plus. That's the thing. But, oh, sorry, vice versa is what I mean. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, the way it would work is like the way Angel and Buffy worked once they split apart. It's like
they were still owned by the same company.
Well, very true.
There's differences,
but I'm just saying that that would be broadly how it would work.
Yeah,
you have an episode of Doctor Who which had Star Trek characters in. You have an episode of Star Trek which had Doctor Who characters in, and they go to their separate islands. They both print some money. Why not? You know.
I mean, Buffy and Angel's an interesting example. So they were on the same network until Buffy season 6 / Angel season 3. No, it was.
I think it's still owned by the same studio, wasn't it?
Same production studio. 6 was the first season of Buffy that was on a different network to Angel. And that was concurrent. Sure it was.
Because it was after graduation. Because I remember they do a telephone call. That's the first crossover.
Yes, and they were still able to do crossovers at that point. But when they went...
No, but they didn't crossover. What I mean is they do a telephone call, whereas Buffy picks up the phone in one episode, Angel picks up in the episode of Angel, but they don't...
But then 2 episodes later they did. But no, trust me, I am right on this, but you can Google it afterwards.
You can Google it. I'm sure I'm right as well.
Well, you're not. When we got to season 6 of Buffy / season 3 of Angel, they weren't allowed to cross over, which is why you got this thing that Buffy had come back from the dead and you had Angel say, oh, I'm off to meet her somewhere in between LA and Sunnydale. And then Buffy said, oh, I've just been to meet her somewhere between. And so they weren't allowed to cross over again for a while after that.
When was the phone call with season 1 of Buffy?
We're devolving into a Buffy.
I think I might be wrong, and I'm admitting it because the phone call was
at the start of season 4 of Buffy / season 1 of Angel.
Yeah, you're right. My mistake. That's why I was thinking of the split parting of the ways. My mistake. I can admit when I'm wrong.
There we go. Hey. So I imagine it. You know, we don't want a situation like that where. You know, they can meet in a comic book and you can say in the show, oh, I met the Doctor last week. You know, if you're going to do it properly. Yeah, work out the logistics yourselves. Anyway, let's talk about Destination Trek for a bit, which was the convention we went to weekend before last.
Yeah, not last weekend. Weekend before that.
And it was awesome again. And we were invited to do our When Trek Goes Wrong at the Movies show on the Science the slow burn tour. Stage. Very slow burn tour. We've now been to 2 venues.
Actually, we've done 3 venues because we've also done the O2.
That wasn't Sheffield. That wasn't When Trek Goes Wrong at the Movie.
Yeah, but it was still Trek.
No, but it's not a tour. A tour has to be the same show.
We're talking about when Trek Goes Wrong at the Movies 2024 tour.
Yeah.
It's done two
big venues. And yeah, we just want to say to everyone who was involved in getting us there, like particularly Jamie, who was in charge of the stage, and you know, it just we're extremely grateful for the opportunity to do it.
Our favorite handler,
yes, Emma, who looks after us, above and beyond the call of duty, to be honest. But
we did buy a cake though,
we did get her a cake for her birthday.
it was a birthday on the Friday Destination Trek,
and we remembered. Of course, and I think you sort of broadly said this already, but thank you to everyone who attended on we're on Sunday at 11 o'clock. It isn't exactly the most glamorous slot. We're not complaining. We're very happy to get in. But for people to kind of show up, we had a decent audience. And someone even said, which I think is very generous of them, I'm very proud of the show we do, but they said it's like our best panel of the event. So thank you very much. Check us in the post, of course, for that one.
Yeah, anyone who wants to say that can say that as loud and often as they want to. But
we had great fun doing it. We did. It's one of these where if you know us, you know that we love Star Trek and it's all tongue in cheek. And it's a comedy show.
And I think sorry, Jim.
I was just going to say our most special thanks, obviously. Our philosophy on Retrek is to piggyback on the shirt tails of people who are far more talented than us. And in that vein, we were really lucky to have Ed join us, Ed Zephyr, who's been on the show, and Emma Thick, who plays an undisclosed... I was going to say plays an undisclosed role. Oh,
sorry, shit. Okay.
Well, no, I think people should know.
Yeah. So
the punchline of the show.
Yeah.
Would not be possible without Emma Thick.
No, exactly.
So massive thanks to Emma Thick.
So, and we were just saying, put them together, and she creates this wonderful creation. And because she's physically incapable of half assing a cosplay. She cannot do it. She can do the best cosplay you've ever seen. Or that's it. I just thought, like, while we're talking about the panels, it might be good to sort of do those first.
Yeah.
There was loads of kind of science ones, loads of the science of Star Trek, that kind of thing, which were absolutely great. The cosplay competition was up on that stage, which we won, which had Emma.
I enjoyed I can't remember her surname, Claire, and she did the music on the flute, and she did the music.
Yeah, that was
Trek.
Great.
That was really great. We had straight after us, there was Trekking Up North. Really enjoyed that panel.
Lovely people. I want to give a shout out. Of course, me and Jim did the best episodes of Trek pitch. So I picked things, and Jim was on Duet amongst.
I did Duet, yeah, and we both lost to Time's Arrow, bizarrely, but you know,
I did win at auctioning.
You did win at auctioning.
Well, just a shout out to the guy who did, before we get into the auctioning, just a shout out to the guy who did do the pitch for Time's Arrow. There was also Picard, The Last Generation, and loads of other fine episodes pitched. Obviously it wasn't judged on the pitches, just on the episodes. But, you know, I'm just kidding. Everyone did wonderfully. And just like to get up there and do that, there was kind of like, I think, I don't mean this as faint praise to anyone because everyone did a wonderful job, but I think there were some more confident pitches than others. So anyone who gets up there and does that, especially if they feel a bit nervous, I think it is a wonderful thing, and I wanted to celebrate that. So
That was great.
Auctioning. So what did we win, Elliot?
Well, I'll start with the one that we made Kirsty take on to put on her bedroom wall. We got the poster for Star Trek V that we give her at the end of it. For coming up with the best, what does God need with a spaceship?
What did she come up with as well?
I can't remember. I can't remember, but you've
I think it was rude.
So that sounds about right.
Yeah,
for us.
Yeah. So we sent Kirsty home with a Star Trek V poster that I'd bid on. And about 20 years ago, I had a house fire and I lost my signed copy of Leonard Nimoy's I Am Spock in the Fire. And I won that back at the auction, so I got an irreplaceable item. And I've got the production notes for season 5 of Voyager, signed by Robert Picardo and Ethan Phillips, with a load of all the photo shoots of everybody, the main cast for it, the season, and the, what do we call them, the little things that go with it.
The like little film cells.
Film cells to go with them. And I also got a signed TOS shirt by William Shatner.
I think that was the bargain of that auction. I think I
do, but I think my aggressive bargaining, my aggressive bidding when I went like that had something to do with people not bidding against me.
Yeah. Yeah, you did very, very well with that. And, you know, we could go on all day about everything. Like,
I did win something else.
Go on.
Actually, we won two other things, I think. But I won as the best cosplay model.
You did when we did, it was Design Your Own Alien.
We did Design Your Own Captain's Chair as well.
Captain's Chair.
Which we got... a full adult body into ours. Like, it was meant to be designed for the kids volunteers, which we a shout out to Captain Naomi, who led our crew. She was wonderful.
Shout out to a mum who was really worried when I kept telling Naomi that she got to take it home with her.
And to Ilana, who ran the that room for the whole weekend, all the activities and everything they had going on in there.
And can we just shout out generally just everyone who ran the event and our volunteers for our panel as well?
I was off to say to the blue shirts, but that doesn't work actually with the Star Trek convention. Yeah. So just to the crew members in the light blue shirts, all did a great job.
Yeah.
Brilliant. You made it fun, you looked after everyone.
Whether it's justified or not, I usually hear someone murmuring with some kind of complaint about like the staff and how they let something slip and everything. I didn't hear one thing genuinely about any of the people organizing and running the event, and that is super rare. Like, again, sometimes it isn't even warranted that they get the complaints, but I never hear no complaints. And I think they might have pitched a perfect game.
And you know, there's fair complaints about the state of the hotel, but that it didn't adversely affect the convention experience whatsoever. It is cheap and cheerful, but don't let that put you off going to Destination next year, because they did a fantastic event this year.
Yeah.
It was the first year in that venue. It'll be the lab a bit more experienced next time in terms of where to put things. Next year, I think, it's going to be something pretty special. So keep an eye on that.
Before we move off it, though, I also just want to give a little shout out to the photos which we got done. I first of all want to shout out. You'll see little Quark behind me here, just there. He was made by our friend Fia Nguyen, who sadly passed away during COVID. So I got to take him and got him to meet his daddy, his spiritual daddy, Quark original. Armin Shimon, and that was just really wonderful. I very quickly, it was like during the photo shoot, so you very quickly have got to go. It's like, by the way, my friend made this, sadly she passed away, but I just want to like say it's real and to get Quark to meet Quark. And he's like, yeah, thanks, you know. And we had a slightly similar experience, which I thought maybe I'd hand over to Jim to tell us.
Yeah, Marina Sirtis got to meet without boring everyone with the story, but when I was very poorly a few years ago, Dr. Squee interviewed Marina Sirtis, and she actually recorded me sort of a get well soon message. And ever since then, I've always wanted to meet her and thank her for that. And this event, we got the chance to do that when we had a picture taken with her. And as Squee said, it was very much, she was a little bit befuddled.
Yeah, that's great.
To get that moment was very special for me. So, yeah, it was an awesome convention and made all the better for those little sort of grace notes that we all had in there.
Well, it was nice that we got all three of us. We got all three of us in the photo with Marina, and we got to say thank you to her.
And I'll treasure that photo always, because it just represents something so much bigger to this show.
Absolutely. And the Squeeze interview with Marina is available on our podcast feed. You'll have to scroll back quite a way to find it. It was one of the earlier episodes, but it's on there. And there's the picture.
Also featuring Quark.
So, yeah, if you've not checked out Destination Trek, or, well, Destination as it is now, or if you're one of these people that thinks, oh, well, it's not endorsed by Paramount anymore, it's not at the NEC anymore, put that out of your head. It's a fantastic convention.
They've still got the guests.
We
all know that you pay for photos, but I'm not being funny. If you look at the cost of autographs and photos compared to an MCM, it's probably half the price.
And when you're getting surrounded by that much Star Trek love, just like genuinely, I can never say this enough. The spirit of Trekkies, not only is this event dripping with love for that, but you just get to spend so much time with like-minded people who just get it. And it's just
time
to do that.
I think I summed it up best actually on the first day. Was it the first day or the Friday? It's like, it is impossible to be a Trekkie and not be left wing.
Yeah, yeah.
You cannot be.
Well, unfortunately.
If you are right wing, you must have been rooting for the Cardassians. Yeah. Very disappointed.
Just while we're doing our quick roundup of our adventures, I'd also just like to give a very quick shout out to Fantasy Forest, where there was actually a group of quite a few Trekkie. Like, Fantasy Forest is great because it's a bit of so many other events rolled into one. It's just so wonderful. So, again, the same sort of like wonderful spirit behind it. And so many people who are dressed in Star Trek cosplay, which was really lovely as well. So,
Rumor has it they're planning something next year, Star Trek related. So.
I have
already
doing
a Friendship Day crossover.
I have already put my name forward, and I do have several uniforms in my closet.
There we go. So, yeah, keep an eye on that one as well. Anyway. We could talk about Destination all for a whole episode, but we'll move on. We'll talk about Prodigy. And we've got these two episodes to cover today. So the first one, I approve of the title because it references
Did you get slightly moist when you read it?
Yeah, I mean, it references the greatest film series of all time. And the episode is called The Fast and the Curious. So
it was nice. And you got that as the first episode title. And the other episode title is a very, very Star Trek kind of classic Trek kind of name.
It's literally just moving a couple of words around, isn't it?
Yeah,
I just love it when they do those kind of callback nods. Yeah. It's very nice.
So we've got The Fast and the Curious. And this starts off with Dal making a captain's log, to which Gwyn gives him a bit of teasing on this, like, you know,
a captain. Well, they all give him a bit of teasing, don't they?
Yeah,
like, they just, you're not a captain anymore. You're a cadet like the rest of us.
They've just spent a year with him as their captain. The second that he's a cadet, it's like, no, it's like, meaning.
That's it. No, you've been demoted.
Yeah, but how much is that like what kids would do in the playground?
Oh, it is, absolutely.
Straight away, no, you're not anymore.
I mean, never mind, kids. If any of us got demoted, we'd have things to say. And around this time, I think this must be a first in Star Trek, Jankum comes out of the toilet and tells him he's blocked it, which...
Yeah. But we actually see the toilet, and it's always big. It's like, we did see B'Elanna in the shower, but yeah. I don't think we've ever...
Not as excitedly as some people might think, but yeah, we did.
Well, to be fair, I think the Doctor got the best view there.
No, I was just in case any Trekkies are going back trying to pause the Netflix.
Let's... Save you the trouble of going back and pausing it, B'Elanna in the shower. The Doctor got the view below what we all saw.
And also you got her from the back when she was getting a sonic shower as well, like when see it after.
Yeah, that's what I mean, the sonic shower.
Is the Doctor there?
The Doctor comes to her and he comes on the screen. He's talking to her and she's not like, really? What are you?
Oh, I think there might be a second one, because there's one where she's been on the planet where they're just covered in muck all the time, and right at the end of the episode it shows the sonic shower working, which I don't think is any dialogue
this is an
couldn't keep B'Elanna out of the sonic shower in that show.
I'm gonna say, we're bordering on Enterprise level.
Like, let's be honest, that was pure clickbait. Was that contamination?
Well, of course it was. They even said so. Like, season 3, we need to sex it up a bit. Let's have a decontamination sexy scene every episode. Go away. But
going back to Jankum going out in the toilet, I think this is like they. Obviously must have toilets.
Well, yes, but it's in the schematics, isn't it?
Yeah, but this is the first time I think you're right. I think it is the first time in Star Trek history we've had someone coming out of a toilet.
And it's certainly the first time they've blocked the toilet. I wonder if I wonder if they have to disintegrate it or beam it away. Or I mean, that'd be really handy. We've all been there, and
yeah.
And this
I should just get a sort of standing to replicator.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Your burger tomorrow.
Yeah, if any, they're eating well tonight. If Jankum's done a big enough one to block it, yeah.
So, all I was thinking is like, I found that moment hilarious, and also the beginning of the next episode, there's a bit which we'll get to. But it's like, I was thinking, it's like, yeah, and I've openly said, and I stick by this, that Jankum is my favourite character from that show, but possibly equal with one other. But I'm so basic, like just the toilet humour, just Jankum telling shit jokes, like that's all I need.
Well, to be fair, we've had nearly 60 years of Star Trek, and this is the first time we've had a toilet joke. So, yeah. You know,
they've actually done really well.
The secret of comedy is timing, and if you wait 59 years or whatever,
it's timing,
and then drop a toilet joke, you're good. It's going to take 61 days to get to the Chakotay planet, which, if you ask me, is too fast. But anyway, they decide we want to rescue Chakotay quicker, and they're going to use a Borg conduit to do so. And instead, they get yoinked out of the Borg conduit.
Yoinked out, they're very appropriate to the toilet humor. They get yanked
indeed.
Out. Although, shout out to Jodie, who was also there with us.
Jodie stayed with the retreat crew.
She was very helpful, like, you know, if nothing else, just holding our bags and doing stuff like that. But she was helping us set up, doing loads of stuff, so thank you.
And says, it's about time we had a toilet. It is.
In fact, so, going back to Destination, did Jodie film our entire show?
I believe so. We need to collate all the pictures and videos and everything. We might put something together
hopefully
there.
Yeah, let's not... who knows how it'll turn
so
out.
So, they get yoinked out of the Borg conduit by a Kazon, which I didn't need to see any more Kazon, I'll be honest. But I mean, I'm not offended by it. The Kazon in this episode's fine. But
I mean, to be honest, that kind of sums up this episode for me. It's like if it was in a lesser or less consistent show, this would be a fine episode, but I think this is the poorer cousin of this series. It's fine. Yeah, it's not bad, but it's not... All the other episodes are so exciting. They've all got something to really punch you.
I have a funny feeling about the Kazon here. And the Kazon seem more advanced than what they were at the start of Voyager. And we only saw
the first
couple of seasons. But I wonder how much Janeway influenced them progressing as a society.
Oh, probably huge amount, because they spent all the time with them, and we've joked about it and we've talked about it, and somehow they were faster than Voyager,
and when they took over the Voyager at one stage, they must have got some intel from them.
Cessna's staying with them as well.
Like, to be fair, we do know why they got in front of the Voyager all the time, because every other episode they were stopping because they were copying that there nebula.
Oh, well, that's it. Yeah, Voyager.
I can definitely relate to that. Like, you know, it's like, right, we need to get home. Yeah, but I need a coffee. God, it's like this just like, if nothing else, Neelix is just pissing me off with this shit of his.
Yeah. So the setup to the episode is that this Kazon Marge wants them to race.
Well, it wants them to pay to get past.
Yes. But instead...
You've got to pay for passage, but...
He's going to let them race.
No, they paid for the passage in the toilet.
Yeah. He's going to let them race. And that's basically what we do for the rest of the episode. It's... our characters are in a couple of the ships. There's enemy racers that turn out to be robots.
Now, what is nice is we do see these new Kazon ships, and there is only 3 Kazon ships showed in Voyager, just at various different scales. They kept scaling them up and down.
Yeah, and they were all variations on a theme as well. They weren't hugely varied.
When I built the Kazon fighter, I did discuss saying then what they did. the Quezon Torpedo and the Quezon Fighter is actually the same model.
Yeah.
And it was built like you could disconnect parts.
Yeah.
To do two models or two ships.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a massively rushed job.
Am I also right in saying alongside the adventure with the racing, we also get the first signs of the... is it Voyager they're on the state? I'm forgetting which ship.
Voyager. They're on Voyager.
They're on Voyager. They are, I thought so. And they start to pick up on... They get start to pick up on the fact that the guys might be a little bit off. The only thing I think was a misstep here was you've got Jenkin Pog starts using the napkin, and they say it's like, God, I didn't even know he knew what one was. And it's like, they had that thing at the beginning of the series where he's trying to act more gentlemanly. I think it would have been nice if they go, oh, he did say he was starting to like...
Yeah, that would have been good.
Yeah, that plays into what he's trying to do.
And I mean, it's a small thing, but it's like, it just would have been a nice little tie into that.
And it's Michelle who starts noticing as well. And, you know, we're starting to emphasize Michelle's character a little bit more. And, you know, maybe we'll see more of her as the season progresses.
Oh,
we'll find out.
I like Michelle.
Yeah.
Right.
So one other thing I want to say about this race is... There's really cool graphics. It looks like, what was that PS1 game? Wipeout or something like that. Where is the video game? Where is the mobile app?
It reminds me of a game I played years ago. And I'm not sure if it's Wipeout because I only played that a couple of times. I think it might have been a bonus level on one of the Spyro games where you got to fly through the rings. It might be Spyro 2. You had to fly and go through them sort of rings.
Yeah, and we've talked about this over and over and over. Where is merchandising? This is a kids' show. Get a mobile app out where you play this race. And it's just madness how they didn't capitalize on this.
It's almost like Paramount are really annoyed with Fox for what they did with Star Wars. So going, we're not going to do that.
I'm just wondering, because the thing is, I can't think of a property where Netflix has really released a lot of merch and stuff. So now it's with Netflix. If it does continue, I wonder if we will get...
Maybe. Netflix. I mean, Stranger Things, arguably. There's a lot of Stranger Things.
Good point. That's a very good point. Yeah, yeah. No, I sang correctly.
But other than that one, I mean, that is that's like a cultural phenomenon. You know, Prodigy's not going to hit that level, but...
But it is. It's that Star Trek thing, and I'm not being funny. Like, and I've got to go back to Destination Trek. If you look at us at that event, we spend money.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
we're actually, I spent money in the auction because the merch stalls weren't there that I wanted. Because I'm not interested in buying an Eagle Moss model.
No.
Which is what a lot of the merch stalls had. There wasn't a lot of
because there was a lot of bankrupt to be bought up.
There was the plastic model kits that I did buy all them.
Yeah.
But there was only two there, and I already had Voyager, so I didn't buy that. Someone else did, and I did have a long chat with him afterwards and told him to subscribe, and I told him how I'd worked out things he could do with the model, and I'd done tutorials, and he can message me, and I'll show him how to do it. But there wasn't the Merc, and that's the point.
Compared to the last one, the merch was down quite a bit.
But it's this thing with Prodigy. Prodigy is a kid's show, and it should be absolute and Lower Decks because it's a cartoon, and it might be more adult, but it appeals to kids because it's a cartoon. These shows should be merked to absolute fuck.
Yeah, you should be able to get absolutely everything. You do a George Lucas. Everything you see on screen, you can buy. Anyway, so the twist in this episode is that There's actually a computer controlling it all. So we get an evil Star Trek computer, which are always fun.
I've never seen that trope at all in Star Trek.
No.
No, I mean, it's new, isn't it? I thought they invented that.
This one is fairly easily defeated. Zero flies into it and blows it up at the cost of their mobility, which is going to feed us into the next episode. I did notice a nice touch at the end of the episode. Dal's doing the captain's log, summing it up, and he hands over to Gwyn, say, why don't you finish up the captain's log? So I don't want to preempt
spoilers.
Further character development, but we'll
it may foreshadow something.
We'll put a pin in where we might go with that one.
But Zero's in a bad shape at the end of this.
Zero's in bad shape.
They've literally just got his white head.
That's it.
Battered.
And then back on Voyager, Michelle's realizing something's wrong, and this is where we get a time freezes briefly, and then this weird tentacly thing takes out the Gwyn hologram. And that's sort of the cliffhanger that ends the episode.
Yeah, as I say, I mean, it's like it's not a bad episode. It's fine, no, it's fine. But it's just every other episode in the series really
it's a good fun episode, but it's almost a filler episode. It doesn't massively drag the story forward.
No, like it doesn't.
And I think it's a testament to how good the series is as a whole, that pretty much every episode drives the story forward. Yeah. That you've got this story that's almost a filler episode. It has little bits because it needs these bits to drive the next episode.
Yeah.
And it's got bits from the last one with the holograms that left. But even though it's a good episode and it's good fun to watch, it feels like one of the lower episodes in the...
Yeah, I'd agree. And I'd say every other episode has got a sort of emotional resonance to what's happening with the characters, which this one doesn't have. And I think if this was in
season one, you'd be absolutely raving about it.
I don't know, actually. I really love season one. I really love season one,
but I think this has been really, really strong episode in season one.
I think season two
is so strong. It makes a standalone-ish filler episode feel a lot worse.
I would say even in season one, I would feel like this, because season one, always every episode was so exciting. It was so like, felt like it still was connected. I'm season two is infinitely better, but season one was infinitely great already. It's like double infinity.
Yeah, I think ironically,
this might be my least favorite of all two seasons.
I think,
but it's still good.
Ironically, for an episode about fast racing, there's very little momentum in this episode.
Yes.
And we do get him says it. It's just what he does.
Yeah, go fast. So, next episode then, Is There in Beauty No Truth? Which, yes, it's an inversion of Is There in Truth No Beauty from the original series, which was the episode that introduced the Medusans. And we get a return of the funky glasses in this episode that we had in that original series episode, which is pretty cool. So this one's all about Zero, really. It starts with them trying to fix Zero's suit. And then, as luck would have it, a colony of non-corporeal entities reaches out to Zero.
And just after they've established that that's what's happening... They then go for the Jenk and Pog joke, which is like, sounds like a planet of nobodies. Get it? Because Medusans don't have any bodies. They've got no bodies. And it's just him for like a good 10 seconds just laughing to himself. Everyone else just standing there, stony face. I suddenly realized why I relate to him so much.
It's that he tells the joke and explains it.
Yeah.
Before anyone has a chance to react to the actual joke, he's, he's explaining why it is a joke, and that
yeah,
and that kills the joke straight away when you have to do that.
I was going to say, and again, we all know that that makes a joke better, right? I mean, like, I don't know. I just seem to be relating to him in this episode. I don't know what it is.
And that's why you're not funny. Joke.
I know.
And then, so we do get a little bit of a back and forth where it's like, oh, they could help me fix my body. And, oh, but we've got a mission to do. No, we're going to go help. Of course you're going to go help Zero. Come on.
The whole, like, the end of the last episode was all about we will look for a way to fix Zero.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And this crew, all the way through, even though they've got an ultimate target, will always look after each other before anything else.
Yeah,
and absolutely.
That's why it's like it's so beautiful to me as a Star Trek franchise, because you've got all the other ones. It's like they're always struggling between their duty and doing the right thing, and like when those two are odds, like how do they square that? And like duty should be about the right thing because of what Starfleet is, but with this, it's all about like, right, well, let's worry about each other, and then we'll worry about the duty and the rules and everything later. It's just
looking
so cool.
After each other is the right thing to do, and they just we are doing the right thing every
and
time.
They so often end up reminding Starfleet of that. Now Starfleet's in the mix, you know. It's like through Janeway, who totally gets it every time. Like, I do love the fact they've never had her being like, it would have been so easy to do the usual thing of her being like, no, the rules and stuff. Oh, wait a minute, should I maybe listen to them? No, she's always straight on the same page as them. And it's like, the rules be damned. Like, they did the right thing. Like, are you going to chuck them out of Starfleet for doing the right thing and protecting us and saving all our lives? No, fuck you. You know, it's like Janeway. This is the badass version of Janeway as well. Anyway, I'm going off on a tangent now. But
let's be fair, Janeway is a rule breaker.
Yeah. But
I don't know,
it feels like she's even better. Like, it's pure rule breaking for the right reasons.
Yeah.
There was that question. Sometimes she broke the rules and she had lost her way. Here it's all.
Are we talking about
like, Tuvix? She's learned. Well, Tuvix, you've got. I was bringing up actually, I was thinking of Equinox, but like, sorry.
What's
the one where her and Chakotay end up at odds about what they should do? Scorpion,
yeah.
There's loads of examples.
So they get to the planet, and the first thing they notice is, wait a minute, we can look at the Medusans without the glasses, and that's because they've been given bodies.
They're corporeal.
They are corporeal, and obviously Zero's very excited about this. But there's that classic Star Trek hint where when you go to a planet and everything looks rosy, there's probably something a little bit shifty going on.
Probably a catch.
And we get they sort of address it where they go, well, you didn't tell them everything. And shh, they'll find out. Don't worry.
And it's nice, a nice little twist. I don't mean to foreshadow what happens later, but it isn't that they're just out and out being evil. That's their way of processing kind of, you know. It's nice they do a little twist on it a little bit.
And it has become a cliche at this point that you do get these seemingly idyllic planets and there's always a hidden agenda somewhere. But, you know, compare and contrast.
I don't think the hidden agenda on this planet that is for Medusians.
No, probably agenda's the wrong word. Yeah, but
I think it's actually
culture.
Normally, this would be quite not acceptable, and I don't think any single Medusian that's been there feels like they've been conned into it.
Yeah, I think culturally they work by experiences, not by like, here's what's going to happen. But you experience it, and that's the way you learn.
The reason Zero's different is because he's in this group.
He's grown up around other races other than his own.
Because all of these, you get the impression that they've all just been floating around the galaxy solo and not joining with people, and they can't join with people. And it gives you an idea, like, in Truth Is No Beauty, was almost an aberration that you had a Medusian that is that was with other people.
And like I was gonna say, sort of, you know, it is a trope. This go to a planet, there's a secret. But compare this to that Discovery episode where they did the race and it turned out that they killed the people at the top. This is that trope, but done better.
Well,
this is a better story. Back on the Voyager, then, this is where they realize there's something wrong with the holograms. Magella's dobbed them in, basically. And I love how the Doctor comes to the realization that it's his own idea from his own horror novels that's betrayed him.
Is this the way he realizes through a 5-minute explanation of his whole novel? And he goes, wait a minute. He almost gets lost in his own story, which is so the
Doctor. What we didn't mention earlier, the Doctor's going to be a main cast member again.
Doctor is coming back to the Academy show. Yeah. And I hope it's this version of the Doctor. I hope he's still talking about his horror novels.
Well, I think he'll be even more cantankerous by then.
Probably,
It's like he is playing the Doctor. Like, they didn't say any MH. They said the Doctor in all the answers.
Yeah.
So if it's not, fuck them, sorry, but they promised me the Doctor.
Yeah, yeah.
But that it does make perfect sense that he's still the Doctor.
Yeah, that's great.
He's a hologram. He won't die. He won't age. He may have gone the data all good things route.
That's what I was saying. Yeah,
and made himself grey to sort of fit in that he's older, but. He might have given himself wrinkles as well, maybe, because
Lester go grey on, but like they did say, because lots of people saying, oh, how are they going to count for their fantasy age? That's really easy. Like he could have looked exactly like he looks up until now, and then he finds out he's going to be a professor, and much like Data, he decides to age himself up.
Yeah, I need to look a bit more distinguished. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now the crew of Voyager knows what's going on. They know, or they strongly suspect, that they've stolen the Infinity. back on the planet, then, the Zero gets a body, and they have this lovely sort of group hug with Zero, which is really nice.
I've been waiting until you said about Zero getting a body, because I think I don't think I'm going to be breaking any ground here to say that obviously Zero's story has been a wonderful trans allegory or non-binary allegory as well. I think like those are represented very heavily within the story. And that moment when they get their body just reminded me of so many stories I see from my friends who have had that moment, and they feel like how they look like they've always felt inside.
Yeah.
Only. And it's, yeah. That moment landed so powerfully for me because of that. And I know we've made the rule, we're not going to talk too much ahead, but the fact that isn't the end of the journey is also very true of that experience, because there's so many other things they have to go through, so many other kind of changes, like hormones and whatever else that they kind of, whatever other treatments, as well as society's reaction, which makes changes and stuff. And it's like, I just think it's been so well done.
It has.
In the best traditions of Star Trek, to kind of tell these stories through allegories and stuff, and just
absolutely,
this moment really touched me, especially first time watching it. But watching it today again, it touched me just as much. It's great.
You see, now I feel a little bit bad about bringing up the thing I'm going to bring up now, because that you're right, that is a lovely moment. But then they go to the Festival of Senses, which is basically that orgy scene from Matrix 2 that everyone hates. And that was all I could think of, that bit where Morpheus is like, oh, have a big party, and it's got all the rave music, and it's awful, it's so bad. This isn't as bad as the scene out of Matrix 2, but in my head.
One doesn't take away from the other, as far as I'm
concerned. Matrix 2 obviously did traumatize me, because I've managed to block it from my memory.
Oh, we
should have. I didn't think of it until you've said it, but you were totally right. I can see it now in this episode.
I wish I'd blocked out Matrix 2. I'm 3. I'm 4. there's a lovely joke where Dal's drinking this. They say, oh, this is fantastic. Oh, that's yak stomach juice. Or, I can't remember what animal they said. But...
Oh, and another thing which like made me think of something here. When they're sat down, it's Dal and Gwyn, and they're sat down just having this nice downbeat moment, which is always kind of nice when they include these kind of just characterful moments. Mm. And I was saying earlier that the Jenkin Pog is equally my favourite character, with Dal as the only other one for me, because I do think kind of some of his story is kind of an allegory again for ADHD, because he is someone who moves fast. He doesn't think through what he's doing always. And then when he stops, he realizes and takes account. Mm. I think that's very relatable to people with ADHD, quite frankly. So it's like, it's another little story, which isn't just, they don't kind of hammer it, but it's like,
no,
I think that's very kind of, it was something about that moment which just made me realize, like, oh shit, that's probably why I relate to him so much, is because I do recognize that experience of like going in and getting excited and wanting to get something done, but sometimes having to be slowed down so I actually get it done properly and to actually consider all the implications of what I'm doing. And I feel like that's told in just that one little moment. It's told so well.
Yeah. And that's, again, just testament to how well written this show is.
Yeah.
That, you know, this episode is about Zero, but we do get these little moments for other characters as well.
Yeah.
And then we get the twist. So it's like, now you have to experience the final sense. There's even the bit where they go, hey, mate, touch, taste, and it's fear, which is a bit cheesy, but I get where they're coming from. Like, you've got to experience this feeling. It does make sense. Like, it is something that can only be experienced, not described. It's just a bit cheesy the way they go, of course, fear is there. Well,
there's two things to that. One is that it's like, because they, again, like it covers their kind of cultural thing, like of the fact that they experience things, they don't tell things, so they experience fear. Whereas in our society, that would be an insane thing to do. It's like, right, we want to teach you about fear. Let's push you off this cliff. You know, you would never do something like that. Whereas for their society, it makes perfect sense. It does talk to cultural differences. And it's like,
to be fair, you're actually very wrong there. Because that is the thing that we used to as kids a lot in the playground. Someone sat on the wall and he'd walk up to them and he'd push them and catch them at the same time as if they and it be there, tell your mum I saved you. And it's
that's a little different.
Into this being a kids show, playing on that. We're doing that fear thing.
But you're saying I was wrong. Like, well, that wasn't what I was saying. Like, that's something that happens when you're kids. It's not a teaching method, which I
know is not their
organized method as opposed to something the way we do things.
Yeah, but it's something that we do as kids.
I don't think this is a kid pushing another kid. This is this is their societal norm.
Yeah.
No, but this is kid. Let's never forget. Like, I know we watch this as adults. But let's not forget, this is aimed at kids. No, it's a family show that adults can enjoy.
It's just a different point to what I was making.
And I think that's where it comes in, that, fear is something that you...
Yeah, it's related.
If you're an organized society, would, like, you know...
But it's, right, yeah, it's absolutely. Now
we're going to teach you about fear, we're going to burn you like...
But what I mean is, you're wrong that kids would push you off a cliff.
No,
kids
I didn't say that, though. I'm not wrong because I didn't say that.
But they'd catch you at the same time.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I'm not wrong because that wasn't what I was saying. We're making 2 points, which are both valid. I was going to add to that was just like, also, I do think for a kid show, it was very nice that it's like, do you want to show fear and stuff? And I think actually that would be kind of speaker work, the way their eyes kind of like go to the confused and kind of pull as opposed to eyeball. I thought that was kind of nice and a bit eerie. Like, it may seem a little cheesy as adults, but I think that is a nice way of fear and something a little more kilter for kids.
And I love the ending of, you know, they go to warn Zero about it and they end up all finishing the race together as a group. which is just again reinforcing the camaraderie between them, the solidarity with them. Yeah, and it's a great ending, which ties in nicely to Zero's decision to leave. That's, you know, yes, I've got these things here that it might not last forever, but this isn't where I belong, sort of thing, which
it
I think is great.
It kind of ties in a little bit for Hollow Gwyn's sort of like the end of her little bit, where she's kind of like her heart rate on the monitor starts going wild, and she gets so scared, and she's going, it's like, don't make me do this. And there was kind of a very big moment of fear that I thought was very nicely done. But it was kind of weird because Janeway, as opposed to just going end program, like she gives a nod to the Doctor to then say end program, which I'm like, you could have just saved her like a couple of
It's because Janeway's on a warning after Tuvix. Like, she's not allowed to kill anybody anymore. She's got to check that it's okay to kill. So even if it's a hologram, she's on a last warning for murdering people.
I'm wondering if they tied that in on purpose or if that's just a sort of coincidence.
Maybe, and I suppose the contrast is that Hollow Gwyn is on her own, whereas they're together as a group. And they're both facing fears, but the outcome is very, very different.
Yeah, I honestly didn't think about it until we're talking about it now. That's kind of interesting.
No, me neither. And yeah, that wraps up the episode. Voyager is now aware of the threat of whatever these things are, which, we're not going to give mega spoilers. But what I will say is, if anybody watches us, and for whatever reason he's not up to date or thinks, oh, I'm not that bothered about Prodigy, but I'll have a listen to what the Retrek guys about it. Must watch these next two episodes before we start talking about them, because the level that Prodigy has taken itself to up until this point, we are about to leap. These next two are what would have been the mid-season finale. And
I don't know if you've noticed.
Delivers.
I don't know if you've noticed what's really lovely about this season is every two-parter times perfectly that we do it in one episode.
Yeah, it does. It works out. And as I say, this two-parter would have been the mid-season finale if it was done in two blocks of 10, as they did it with the first season. And it is epic enough to feel like they could have had a mid-season break after it. So watch it anyway, because it's awesome.
And if you watch it, we're going to get it renewed. Cartoons may not be your main passion, but this is great Star Trek.
It is.
And some of us absolutely love it.
Yeah.
For those who love it.
We need a hashtag save Prodigy.
Sure there's many. We can only do hashtag justice for Ash. That's what we're all about at the minute.
Ash Wednesday is the campaign. It's the Ash Wednesday.
We can
campaign.
Only have one call at a time.
Remind people when Retrek comes out.
But yeah, we will be back next week to talk about what would have been the mid-season finale and what is an absolutely epic two-parter of Prodigy. If you've not watched it, do yourselves a favor and watch it. If you have watched it, watch it again, because we are going to spoil the heck out of it next week. And I'm very excited. Very excited to talk about it. In the meantime, you can get in touch with us. We're at RetrekPod on X. We're RetrekPod@gmail.com. We're all over the various social media, including Retrek Model Studios on YouTube.
Whoa, you broke up a bit there, Jim.
Sorry.
Oh, I got you, okay.
But currently, I bought a phaser rifle at Destination Trek. I had a bit of an accident with it. It came with this strap that got caught on the door handle and it pulled it out of my hand. It fell down, a couple of bits came off. So I've got home and I've taken it apart and I'm rebuilding it and repainting it as it should be. And I've got all the screenshots from the original studio props. So I'm replicating it now into how it should look.
The only thing which can make this perch any better for you, Elliot, is to have to take it apart and re-put it together again. That's like your dream.
Well, I've already started a bit of painting. It maybe doesn't look a lot like it, but once this is in copper and stuff, you'll get the idea instead of the stupid gold printing material.
And you see, that is just, you know, what's the phrase? Making what is it?
Enhancing.
No, what's that phrase where something bad happens and you make something really good out of it? Making
lemonade out of
lemons. That's it, making lemonade out of lemons. That's what Elliot's doing there. Dr. Squee, what have we got going on with the Dr. Squee show?
Well, we mentioned Fantasy Forest. I got to sit down and talk to not only a man misfit about the latest things happening in her world, but also Victor and the Bully. So that's going to be this week.
Fantastic. And we'll be back next week to talk about the...
Can we just give a shout out? I think it's about 6 weeks till we'll be seeing Madam Misfit next.
Oh, yeah, it will be.
Big
like
friend
that.
Of ours, Sarah Jane. If you do love like Madam Misfit and Sarah Jane, she has a new album out now, Vitamin N.
You can pre-order it. You can pick up your physical copies at all of the gigs, including Nerd Night 2, which is in September, where we will be in attendance.
You can buy tickets now, and please do look up her singles, Pay It Forward, and was there another one?
Game On's fairly recent, yeah.
And we are all in... Obviously, we have the backing vocalists.
We are the backing vocalists, and we're not making that up. That's actually true.
Yeah, I mean, there might be a group of people from Nerd Night 1, but look, we were the main ones, I think.
Of course. So, yes, we will see you next week to talk about the next episodes of Prodigy. Thanks for trekking with us this time, and we will see you next time on the retrek.
Thank you.
LLAP, and make it go fast.